it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. You got me, Kevin Hagland. You got, Corey Majors. And, of course, the famous Alec Medford. Gentlemen, it's time for some baseball discussions. I got a couple of notes to catch up with. The Texas Rangers signed Declan Cronin to a minor league deal. He's a 28-year-old who pitched with the Marlins. He had pitched with the White Sox. He's not that good. But the good news is he won't pitch for a year because of Tommy John surgery.
That's us.
He has a career 4.98 ERA and 3 wins at the age of 28. They signed him to a 2-year deal, and he'll pitch in 2027.
He didn't even pitch for Miami when Schumacher was there. Right? Like, that's even worse. Like, yeah, why?
But, to be fair, it was a minor league deal. Okay. And then also, the Astros are going to stick with their general manager and their manager, despite the late season collapse and missing the playoffs. Now, for the Texas Rangers, go ahead and give me cut number 9, if you can. I want to know what kind of challenges you think lie ahead for Schumacher and for the Rangers.
The 1-0 is hit high and deep into center field. Mullins going back, still going back, looking up. It's gone. Just over the wall between the 407 marker and 410 marker. Home run number 11 for Corey Seager makes it 6-0 Rangers.
Because I do think that Schumacher has some advantages. The first being he's not coming into a brand new system. Like, they brought him here with, I think we all agree, the idea that eventually he would be the manager. So it feels like he's kind of been training for this. But on the flip side, it does feel like there's a possibility of a whole lot of roster turnover going into next season.
How much roster turnover? About half the roster?
Yes.
Half of the starting lineup?
I could see that.
All right, let's say right field, catcher, first base.
Yep. Third, I think maybe third base.
And maybe one of the middle infielders.
Or maybe both of them.
Maybe, so Wyatt Langford, Osuna are safe.
I guess.
Cody Freeman has a chance.
Yeah.
What was Higgy's deal?
I think he'll still be here.
Okay. And then your pitching stats. I think that there's, you have to decide what kind of team you're going to be.
Yes.
Bochy talked about that a little bit.
Yeah, 2 years.
On our way out, it sounded like. Because if we were asking a lot of questions, they were kind of turning our attention to next year already. And he said, one of them was, can you still be a slugging team or do you think you're going to change the philosophy of hitting?
Yeah.
And Kevin, honestly, like, you need some sluggers on your team. They also have to slug when given the opportunity.
Okay.
Adolis did not when given the opportunity this year.
So that's what I'm curious about. Because let's just go with Seager, Marcus Semien, and Jock Peterson. I'm not saying that like you would view Marcus Semien as a slugger, but he could pop some home runs. Jock Peterson, after having one of the worst seasons in modern baseball, will almost certainly opt in to his player option. Would the Rangers consider dealing him knowing that they have to eat almost all of that money, just knowing, hey, we can save like, I don't know,
$3 to $5 million.
All right, so there's one of your sluggers.
And one of the things that you're talking about, too, is you say Skip's not completely new to this. He watched this thing.
Yes.
So if he watched Jock, a guy who his teammates seem to like, but he's not always available to his teammates, is that fair?
Yeah.
Teammates, they're like, yeah, he's fun. But also, you want, as a teammate, you want somebody that's going to get the job done, too.
Yes.
So I would say that he looked at it, and he's like, I would prefer not having him in this clubhouse.
Yes.
If I'm the manager, if I'm Skip, that's what I would have been thinking.
And then Corey Seager, I could see I'm not calling.
I do everything I could to try and keep Corey Seager.
And I agree with that, but you could definitely see a world in which they trade Corey Seager.
I can. It's going to, but there's no way that you're going to find a favorable trade to you.
That's probably true. And you've already tried to trade Marcus Semien, so maybe they'll try that again, but you're probably going to have to eat at least half of that money. And so what I'm curious about is, are you going to get rid of like two of those three, maybe all three, and eat a crap ton of money? And maybe this team really does look more like a, not rebuild, because I know Chris Young doesn't want to use that word, but closer to a rebuild. The positive.
A renovation.
Yeah. Ooh, that's a good way to put it. So the Rangers were listed among all the teams that missed the playoffs by The Athletic. They were power ranked as fifth. And so they had the Astros at one, then the Braves, then the Royals, then the Mets, then the Rangers.
How much of that do you think is the competitive nature of Chris Young being something that people believe in?
Believe it or not, I actually don't think that played a lot into it.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you why. I understand why that would be. I'm going to tell you why. Because there are three paragraphs, and the first two paragraphs are all about the pitching. And so I think it's...
If you have that, you have a chance.
I think you can look at it now, and you're like, DeGrom, Evaldi, Leiter. I'm not necessarily thinking they'll keep Merrill Kelly. Unfortunately, probably John Gray is on the way out. But you look at those three, and you're like, man... That's a hell of a start.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. And so that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Now,
add in the competitive nature of Chris Young, and I don't think he's going to stop looking for a way to find bats. Kevin, this year might be his freest year from the World Series roster.
Okay. To kind of piggyback along with that, Chris Young and Ross Fenstermaker said that they're going to try to figure out which players fit in this home ballpark. Now, we've talked about it. Kind of surprising, given like the historical direction of the Texas Rangers. This ballpark is not very friendly.
It plays very
to hitters. Yeah, and because we talked about it, even with like some of the drop in how far balls would go, it was disproportionate at Globe Life Field. And so that's a great question. Is it, because there are players like Josh Young and Adolis that you still control, but you can just move on from, as opposed to like Jock Peterson, you're going to take a heavy monetary hit. Marcus Semien, same, probably even Corey Seager to a certain extent. But there are other players that I wonder if they just determine maybe your game doesn't fit here.
Okay. And you say game, and I'm very interested in drilling into this a little more. What I heard and learned this year, Kevin, was the doors in left field created some of the dead balls. So you don't want right-handed power hitters. You want left-handed power hitters.
Because
you're hitting those go to right field. They're away from those doors. Now, they did keep those doors closed. This is the science of a building that we're trying to figure out here.
And then you're going to get in trouble if you load your lineup with too many left-handed hitters, because you're still going to run into a whole lot of right-handed pitching, which in theory would be detrimental for you. All right. So I got a couple of other, I don't know, maybe points, maybe questions. How are you going to rebuild the bullpen from scratch? Now, I'm not saying like, hey, I need your eight people right now. But if we're talking about the challenges that lie ahead, maybe you think it is the roster turnover. But if it's not, surely it's almost entirely rebuilding the bullpen, right?
How does Cole Winn fit into this? Cole Winn had some moments this year.
I think Cole Winn deserves a spot in the bullpen.
How does Jacob Latz fit into this? Because he could be a starter.
Yes, I think they're going to give him... This is just a organizational philosophy, and you'd probably argue that all baseball teams feel this way. If all things are equal and you believe they have the similar skill sets to do both, you're going to push a pitcher as a starter. And so I think Jacob Latz will get a real look at being a starter, unless they determine that they cannot construct the bullpen they want, and that's maybe a plan B.
Because if you can do that, you're like, okay, I got a righty and a lefty that I can work with. If you decide you're going to go with them in the bullpen, And then now I need a legitimate closer, and then I need to build from there. But I think those two can be viable pieces if Lats isn't a starter. I've given up on Cole Winn becoming a starter.
Yes.
That's just like where
me,
I am.
Me too.
But I think that there's more intrigue in what those two can add to this thing. The rest of the bullpen, Kevin, I think you're going to have to pay for a closer.
Okay.
I don't think you have. Is Teodo one?
Yeah, but he's coming off a rough season. So I don't.
That's what I don't know if I can trust.
Yeah. No, I agree. So I agree with
that. That's why I think if you. But then again, I also think you pay for a closer when you know you're a contender. And yeah. I don't know that this team's a contender right now.
Okay. And so then if that is the case, what about Kamar Rocker? Now, Kamar Rocker as a starter.
Oh,
as a starter.
Well, if he's not traded in a package with either Semien or Seager.
And you know what? Especially for Semien. You do wonder if not only would it not be a return that you would want for Semien, are you going to have to send away things to like get some of that money
so
off
the
books?
Yeah, no, I that's a high possibility.
Well, just the issue that you run into there, I think he'll get an opportunity to win a starting spot. I really do. Is that they wanted to redo some of the mechanics and there's been a little
pushback?
Give and take. Yeah,
okay,
pushback.
Let me ask you about that. Do you admire that? That he's not just saying, yes, please change everything about what I do.
Yeah.
That he's a little resistant to it. Because sometimes you see guys that they say, okay, let's change your mechanics. They change them so much, and then they've forgotten what they did well, and they're not good at it anymore. And then they're like, well, then I went back to what I grew up doing so well, and okay. It helped me.
I agree with you, depending on how far it goes. Because there's been some conflicting reports, right? Like, you and I have heard a lot of the similar things of questioning, yes, being presented with evidence that you do need to make a change. If you're like, I don't see it, that you're like, it's right there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what else to show you. If that is the case, then I think that's problematic. All right. Next question. Let's go off of the tenet that like maybe they really are fine with not being fine, but they're probably not going to be a contender and they're going to build up with some of the young kids. What is the ETA for Sebastian Walcott, especially if you made more dramatic infield moves, middle infield moves? I'm not saying you need to do this whatsoever. I think it's perfectly fine to let Sebastian Walcott, who's 19, just stay in the minor leagues for a whole nother season. That's right. And then maybe trot him out for 2027. But if you were going the more dramatic route, he played well.
I'm curious.
In double A.
I'm curious. Can he play third base?
Yeah.
Like, I understand people.
I actually think third base might make more sense. He's got the arm.
Yeah, a lot of people's big concern is his size at shortstop.
Mobility, yeah.
And you're like, well, I mean, look at Corey. Look at a lot of the shortstops right now. They seem to be longer athletes.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know his athleticism. I haven't watched his athleticism enough to know, is he like that nimble dude out there? But if he can play third and you've decided to move on from Josh Jung, I'm not saying Josh Smith is your solution at shortstop.
Right.
Because everybody has a different thought on Josh Smith. I've been very adamant about mine. When the coaches tell me that he's an everyday starter, I'll believe it.
Look, and I think you look at the last 2 years, and there's no way that you can go into this season and say you're going to be an everyday starter. I think that would be a terrible idea.
And I didn't keep pushing that idea, what you just said, this past season, because I was really hopeful that he would grow. But he did have a dip at the end of the year. But if Walcott can play third, and he's...
I can see it.
Okay with taking on that position. That's another thing too.
That's a different discussion.
You never really know what an agent is having the argument about. If he can do that though, I'd be more than happy to see him in that spot and let him grow in it this year. The at bats are the thing that I think that you're most concerned about with a young hitter at 19 years old.
Yeah.
Is losing confidence at the plate, and you don't want that to happen.
So if I had to guess right now, it would be that Walcott spends most, if not all, of 2026 in the minors, and they keep Corey Seager. But It really does sound like all possible options have been on the table, and then that is where I think the competitive nature of Chris Young comes in. I know nobody wants to lose, but it feels like Chris Young's soul is being crushed at a different level every time they lose. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a difference in terms of what you're willing to do.
And that's why I think this is as free as he's been in a while since 23, Kevin.
Maybe because
he doesn't feel obligated to some of these guys. Their lack of success the last 2 years also relieves some of that obligation. I don't have to give this guy a chance just because he won us a World Series anymore.
And I'm going to list three specific people that I think fit in that category. Adolis, Young, and Heim.
Yep.
Those are the three. It's more than that at certain times. We've all been frustrated. We've talked about some of the frustrations with Marcus Semien. Those are the three that I think of in terms of I'm not constrained either managerial wise or like fan sentiment wise.
You have to stick with them. Technically a second, maybe third tier player on this team specifically.
Yes.
And you have to play at a certain level to maintain that status. You did not maintain it this year.
Yeah. And so while we were in the midst of the baseball playoffs, I just wanted to throw out some of those questions. We'll have plenty of time to start to get the answers or speculate even more, but I thought that was a good place to start.
Good job, man.
Thanks. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we move into the Expressway. We will scout the Panthers. Also here from Brian Schottenheimer. All coming up next right here on The Fan.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Bryce Young, got his man! Touchdown! Mitchell Evans! And the Panthers take the lead!
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 through the Fan. We will hear from Dallas Cowboys head coach Brian Schottenheimer in a few minutes. But right now, it's time to scout the Panthers. Do you want to start with Tet McMillan? Tet McMillan, who obviously a lot of conversation around these parts leading into the draft, he's looking like he still has the potential to be a stud NFL player. It's really early in his career. But early in his career, they are only connecting with him on 56% of the targets, and he has zero touchdowns.
Yeah, the zero touchdowns thing is what's really killing me in fantasy football, Kevin, because I do have Tet McMillan running right now. However, he gets 8+ targets every game, and he is, I know you said catching about 50% of those. The last game, it was 75%.
Okay.
So I think, and he did have a really bad game against Atlanta. He only caught 3 of those 8. But he is showing, because I've watched a lot of him, weirdly. I haven't watched a lot of how the offensive line runs the football. I didn't watch a lot of the Dowdle game. But I did watch a lot of Tet because I'm, you know, keeping up with his fantasy numbers. He runs some pretty good routes at times, runs some pretty sloppy routes at times. The good ones, Bryce Young definitely finds him, and it's those opportunities, the times that he decides I'm going and I'm perfectly capable of going over the middle of the field and creating first downs. That's what his reliability, Keyshawn Johnson type stuff.
Right.
Where you're just like, hey, let's keep these chains moving. That's what Tet's doing really well.
Well, keep an eye on that. If he's going over the middle of the field, Rico Dowdle is going to the right side. Now, you talked about how he's running. Here's what you need to know. Specifically, he piled up yards running to the right side of the formation. 13 carries for 171 yards going to the right. That is the most yards running to the right side of your formation since Derrick Henry 4.5 years ago.
Wow.
So, like, it was a dominant effort going to the right side. And look, with all due respect to Hubbard, you know, talk about where he is and where he's not, I do not see how you cannot look to replicate that exact formula against a Cowboys team that we've talked about extensively already this week was very disappointing from the run defense.
Yeah.
Aspect.
Yeah, and I guess going, you know, behind Robert Hunt and Taylor Morton is proven successful for them to that right side, and they're a load. You know, they absolutely are, and they got a pretty good coaching change they added to that too. Well, I wanted to add one other thing to question one thing about McMillan. How do you feel with the coverage on McMillan? the size wise,
yeah,
like Diggs is the best size connection with right. him. McMillan's not the burner. He's fast, but he's not a burner.
And that's why I'm probably okay with more of the Diggs matchup, because you noticed something in that game, whether it was kind of the pivot move that just shook Trayvon Diggs and he got lost in that play, or how deep he's been playing on some of these third and fourth clearly passing downs.
Yeah.
He is very concerned about getting beat. Now, I'm not sure if that's a mental aspect from his injury or he is just still slower coming back from that injury, but his level of speed at this point is a concern.
I wonder if it has something to do with the zone, you know, a little bit of the...
Could be.
But I agree with you on the aspect of... There was a time when he knew he could catch up no matter what.
Sure.
He even would say that. He was like, I have great catch-up speed.
And maybe that can come back. I don't know.
Maybe not this year.
That's fair.
But I think he's going to be better by the end of the season than he was early in the season, just because he had to get his feet back underneath him.
Now, as we bounce back and forth between Tet and Dowdle, this is something where we've talked about Dowdle wanting like his revenge, but he was asked about that and he goes, they better buckle up.
Yeah.
I think they know for sure. I was there for 5 years, and this is the part. They didn't keep me there for 5 years for no reason. I will definitely say that. Looking forward to playing those guys next week. We'll handle it when we get there. I would have never thought we would have to have a discussion about the Rico Dowdle revenge game. Yet, Corey, here we are.
Yeah. Whenever he was in college, that's where a lot of people got really high on Rico Dowdle, was what he did in college.
Among other things,
The injuries were definitely something that plagued him throughout, even college, and then as he got into the NFL, and that kept him off the field. That was a problem. That was a struggle. But when we saw what he could actually do, anytime he was healthy and he got the ball and he got opportunities, he felt pretty good. I still don't understand why it took so ridiculously long last year for Mike McCarthy to go, you know what, Zeke is not the answer, guys. I finally done all the studies. I went back to my barn, watched all the film, and Zeke, we got to give this ball to Rico. Who in that room finally stood up and said, Rico's the guy? And then
God bless that person.
And then throughout the season, Kevin, as we were watching what, that 4 100-yard games and 5 games,
yeah,
we all said to ourselves, well, he just ran himself out of Dallas.
Yes.
And that was unfortunate.
And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Now, good news for the Cowboys. The Panthers DC has been there for 3 years, and guess what's been a staple of his 3-year run there? They can't stop the run or tight ends. I'm going to focus more specifically on the tight ends because they actually did a really good job stopping the run this past weekend. Darren Waller was a problem for them all game long. He had 5 targets for 78 yards and a touchdown in the first half, and that was part of the reason the Dolphins jumped out to a big lead. But they have struggled covering tight ends. And what have we talked about on a week-by-week basis? The historical progress of Jake Ferguson. Now, I know he scored a couple of those touchdowns, but Jake Ferguson can also nickel and dime you to death. And so I do kind of wonder if this could be a game where Jake Ferguson could just chip, 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 chip away at that defense.
Yes, 1,000%. And if you do what you do with Javonte Williams, too, chipping away at that, and you get yourself a lead and your defense can keep Carolina from scoring, what's going to end up happening is that defense is going to have to start taking some chances.
Right.
And then you're going to have George Pickens open downfield. And so, yes, Kevin, I think this should be Jake Ferguson day. But this is the great thing I've really enjoyed about what Schottenheimer's done as a play caller this year is he has been finding – since the first game, I felt, and because I didn't feel he did a good enough job of exposing some of what Philadelphia's weaknesses were. The Bears game, they got too far behind and couldn't do what they wanted to do. I blame that game on the defense. But I felt like that Schottenheimer as a play caller has found the weaknesses, attacked them, and been able to balance setting up those weaknesses too for big plays.
There is a lot of similarities between the Panthers' pass rush and the Cowboys' pass rush. So the Panthers' pass rush, they went into that game against the Dolphins. They had 2 sacks all year. We talked about it for the Cowboys. They had 5 all year. And while the Cowboys matched their sack total, the Panthers surpassed theirs in one game. They had 3 sacks. And so you're not this is not a matchup between two, like, phenomenal defensive lines in terms of getting pressure, which, depending on what your offensive line looks like, that could be a really good thing for the Cowboys once again. But when we said, like, the very resistible force against the very movable object, that feels like both of these pass rushes, especially in the first four games. But this last weekend, it was big for the Panthers. It was big for the Cowboys. But just watch out for that, because both teams have not been so good.
So you're trying to say maybe it's real, maybe it's Taco.
I will say at this point, I'll still believe it's Taco.
Gotcha.
At this point.
There's somebody in the world right now going, thinking that they just had a stroke. They're like, what are these guys talking about?
Oh, yes. That is a
very... We used to have a segment called Real or Taco when we were on nights. Our boss said, you have to fix that, guys.
We also had a segment called Area 52.
Oh, my gosh.
There were several segments that
fell. We had a lot of fun at night.
Yes.
Man.
Yes, we did. Now, the Panthers defense as a whole.
And that's why you should listen to Fan After Dark.
Absolutely. They're 10th in the league in passing yards allowed.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay. They're 14th in the league in rushing yards allowed. Okay, that's not so bad. They're 19th in the league in points allowed. So, you know how we've talked about the Cowboys defense, especially going back to that Jets game where they were getting hit for yards, but they weren't giving up points. The Panthers defense has been almost the exact opposite. Yardage-wise, they've looked very competent this year, but then they give up points.
How much of that is the fact that Bryce Young and the offense turn the ball over to the opponent in shorter situations?
Now, that is problematic for them because you can still count on the Bryce Young turnover just when you need it. He turned the ball over in the Cardinals' first two possessions. So look, you're talking about, I know Carolina's first two possessions, excuse me, against the Dolphins. I know they made the comeback and they won the game, but there's a very real set of reasons that they fell behind 17-0. Part, couldn't cover the tight end. Another part, they kept turning the ball over, and Bryce Young has turned the ball over. Oh, it's time to go to Shoddy right here on the Fan.
Calvin Watkins, Dallas Morning News. Tyler Guyton, is he still in a concussion protocol?
He's finishing it up. He had another exam probably right now, and hopefully he'll be out of it shortly.
Sanborn, is he in the protocol?
Yep, everybody's going through their steps, and he is, and I think everybody's feeling better, but it's a process, as we know.
I think we asked you this last week. How do you deal with starters hurt and a backup?
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, produces maybe beyond his expectations. How do you manage that when an injured player is kind of healthy and wants to come back?
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm a little bit old school. I don't really think that you lose your job because of an injury. But that also doesn't guarantee that you're going to stay the full-time starter. So, again, it goes back to the whole mantra of compete every day. But when guys come back off injuries, you know, they're going to get their spot back. But you do earn more opportunities if you're a backup that goes in and performs well.
Clarence Hill, DLLS Cowboys, can you update us on anybody you expect back this week that hasn't played a few weeks? Is it
There's guys moving around better. I think as the week goes, there's a few guys that we might be able to get back, but it's hit and miss. You know, today's a day that you'll probably see more guys on the grass, but being on the grass doesn't necessarily mean that they're cleared to play. So there's a process, you know, that they go through, Clarence, where, you know, it's with, you know, the trainers, and then they do some more on the grass, and then they move into mocks, and then they move into practice. But we are getting healthier. But to the extent of it, I'm not going to share that at this point.
Do we start Revels window yet, or are we still waiting on that as well?
Still taking our time with that. You know, young player, very talented player. And just like with all the guys that we have to make these decisions on, we're going to be very selective with that because it does put you in a time frame where you have to make a decision, you know, in 3 weeks. And but I really like what he's doing. Another guy that's out there on the grass doing a lot of good things.
You know, you've shown some accountability with players, obviously – mentioned Diggs couple of weeks ago for the first couple of series, and last week you made some changes with Elam. Do you talk to players about that? How do you hold them accountable? Let them know, hey, this is what's best for the team, and we're just going to put the best player we think on. How are you handling those type of things?
Yeah, I try to get to each player. I think it's important. If for some reason I don't, the position coach definitely does. But you know, in those cases, you have real conversations. I think the player deserves to understand why the decision's being made, and it's our job to explain to them. And it's nothing that's, you know, I hate the word, you know, benching. To me, it's more about giving someone else another opportunity, you know, letting somebody that's competed well at a high level go do that. You know, these players don't necessarily get benched. It's they're held accountable. But the communication piece is very important to me just because I think they deserve to know. And that's our job to have those hard conversations.
Brian Todorcevic with ESPN. You've talked before how Clayton Adams was a guy that you had noticed before. And how did he get on your radar? Was there someone that he worked with, or you just were watching Arizona film? Like, how did that all?
No, it goes back to Indianapolis. When he was a tight end coach in Indianapolis, I knew some guys on that staff that just, you know, when you're making your phone calls over the summer, which is what I do because I don't have other than hang with my family, much better to do than check in and see who some of the coaches are that maybe you don't know. And yeah, his name came up and they just said, you know, turn on the film. I coached a guy by the name of Jack Doyle when I was in Indianapolis, and Jack raved about Clayton. And so he kind of came on my radar. And then when I got a chance to spend some time with him, we played the Colts, I think the year I was a consultant, we played them. And so I met him before the game and we just kind of, you know, tried to do that. I'm not a big pregame talker, but you know, he was a guy I actually looked for. I wanted to go say hello and introduce myself, and we just kind of stayed in touch after that.
And then switching topics, third straight year you guys have played the Panthers. What help, what benefit is that in terms of preparation, maybe on both sides of the ball?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you know some of the people. I think, you know, I know the staff there very well. I hold them all in high regard, having been with Dave Canales and Pat McPherson, Will Harriger, Brad Idzik. You know, I've competed against Ejiro a bunch. I see them playing with a lot of confidence right now. I see them playing very well at home. I think they're 2-0 at home. You know, they got Derek Brown back on defense. So familiarity on both sides, but as you guys all know, it's going to come down to how we both perform on Sunday afternoon. And but Dave, you know, has them playing with a lot of confidence.
John Machado with The Athletic. While talking about you after the game, Dak said, when you get to game day, he talks about playing free and being loose, and he's the epitome of that. If you want to see somebody who's enjoying the moment, it's Shoddy. So just kind of where do you think that comes from, and why do you think that's important?
The reason I laugh is because I think of some of the things I say. I tend to sing songs sometimes, you know, when I'm out there. I told Dak in the third quarter, I said, yeah, I suck right now, but I'll come back. And then we hit the big play to Pickens, and I said, hey, I'm back. You know, look, I've always talked about how blessed I am, and just to be in this position, just to be coaching in the NFL, and then to be leading these young men, you know, so there's stressful moments for sure. You know, you ask the guys that coach with me and play for me. I've got a temper, but I try to keep it loose and light, and I like to have fun with it.
You've been obviously other stops, other teams. Is there maybe some even more importance to have something like that with the Dallas Cowboys, because there is always so much going on? They are a team that's always in the spotlight. There is a lot of drama and things that come with it that maybe that helps.
You know, John, I don't know. I don't really know. I never look at this as like, you know, maybe because I was a 32-year-old, 33-year-old coordinator in New York, and we were doing Hard Knocks, and you know, I was trying to find my way, you know, leading men, and I'm coaching Brett Favre, who's 40 years old. So I don't look at it that way. I think it's important. I think it's how you should approach playing this game. You know, all you can do is over try. I mean, you can truly go out there and, because it's so important that, hey, you know, we're playing, you know, the Seahawks, and man, I got to show them they should have never fired me in 2020, and I'm going to show them, and you mess up, you know, because you're trying too hard. You put the work in during the week, you get the preparation done, you get the players to feel confident, and then you go out on game day and you just let it rip, man. You just let it go, and I think that's how you handle the ups and downs, like, you know, of this game. And I mean, I was tired. The players were tired after Sunday. The emotions of it, up and the downs, and the, you know, it's like a game where you feel like we had the game in hand most of the time, but like there's constantly things going on. And I think really, you know, trying to get these guys to understand to play free and relax is the best way to go out there and be the best version of yourself.
Yeah. Nick Harris, former Star Telegram. Do you remember that summer conversation, who it was with that pointed you to Clayton Adams?
Might have been Chris Ballard. I don't. I know I talked to a number of people in the building. I don't remember per se. Matt Turpinning was a guy I know I talked to about Clayton. He's a big personnel guy there. But it's usually multiple people. I mean, I usually get the name from two or three people before I ever pick up the phone and call. And it's probably weird, like, you know, hey, Brian Schottenheimer, how you doing? Nice to meet you. Hey, just wanted to talk to you. I mean, like, but that's the type of guy I am. I, you know, I cold call people all the time.
And then going into the interview process, was that kind of your focus? Was it Clayton Adams, or was it really like, okay, let's look at these couple of guys, and Clayton showed up?
No, I mean, again, I wanted to get Clayton in front of, you know, the staff. I wanted to get Clayton in front of Jerry. I think it, you know, and Steven, I think it helps it. You know, Matt Eberflus was a huge proponent of Clayton. They had been together. You know, Tyler Boyles, my chief of staff, was with him. But no, I mean, it was a very open search. And then when Clayton came in here along with a couple of the other guys, I think he did a great job of kind of separating himself, and he fit the what we were looking for.
How long did it take for him to really settle in, do you think, and once he arrived on the job? Was it
quick? No, I don't think it's ever quick. I think it takes time. You know, it's no different than me sitting in this chair. It takes time. But I will say this. I think, you know, over the past 6-8 weeks, you know, since we've gotten back to Dallas, I think he's really finding his flow. Like I said, he does an incredible job with the staff of delegating and doing different things. He's great in front of the room. He's a little bit like me that, you know, John was talking about. He's a loose guy that likes to have a good time, and I've told you guys, you know, you need to go take him to go get drinks. He's just an incredible personality. He's funny as anything, and the players kind of feed off of him.
Patrick.
Hey, Coach. Patrick Walker, DallasCowboys.com. J.C. Horn, he was a guy that the Cowboys had some pre-draft interest in. Can you just talk about the challenges of going against him and why he makes it so difficult on the opposing wide receiver?
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, I know his dad, Joe Horn, played for my dad, and I was on the staff as a young QC when Joe was there. And so really, you know, love Joe, and he's obviously done a great job mentoring, you know, JC, and yeah, just dynamic coverage skills. I mean, really, he's competitive, very confident, great transition. I can see why the Cowboys and a lot of teams coveted him. I think he's playing at a high level, you know, with the way he not only covers, but the way he tackles. He's an excellent blitzer. You know, he got free on us last year in a game, a little corner blitz, you know, on third down that we mis-ID'd. And, yeah, there's a lot to like.
All right, Joe.
Joe Hoyt, Dallas Morning News. What does marrying the run and the pass mean to you, and where does that philosophy come from?
Marrying the run and the pass means that, you know, there's no scouting giveaways. There's no tells. There's no where, hey, if we're in the gun, we're throwing it. If we're under, we're running it. If we're in, you know, 2x2 with both edges closed, it's 85% run. You know, runs that we have in the game, we're going to have action passes off of that and vice versa. And I think that's what, you know, there's so much technology now, Joe, in terms of our ability to get information, that everyone, the coaches give it to the players have it, that if you don't do that, you are battling uphill, because they're obviously all very, very talented players, very intelligent, great coaches. If you don't do that, then in my opinion, there's going to be a handful of plays in a game, which every play matters, that the defense is predicting or the offense is predicting what you're going to do. And so, you know, I think, you know, we actually have people that's all they do. Hey, tell us about this. Some of it's analytics. Some of them are coaches. I won't get into the specifics of it, but like they literally are looking for trends, and then we're going to break those trends. Because if you break those trends early in games, for example, in the openers, then what the players say is, okay, that doesn't hold up. So I remember playing San Francisco and Fred Warner, I'll go Carolina, Luke Kuechly. I mean, the guy's one of the best to ever do it in terms of diagnosing things and having tells, and Russ coming off the bench and be like, yeah, he's calling out every play. Like, literally, he's calling out every play. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, he's calling out every play. Trap here, three step there. And so I think the guys that overdo the studying, you can use it as an advantage, because otherwise you're playing into their hands.
TJ Bass and Brock Hoffman, they're really close. They locker roommates. One's quiet, one's loud.
One wears face paint, one doesn't.
Yeah.
One talks trash to everybody, and one doesn't.
Yeah. Well, their relationship, obviously, how much does that help when they, because they've been called upon a lot at the same time. How much does that relationship help them to be called upon together?
Yeah, I think, you know, it goes back to the fact that they've practiced together a lot. I mean, I talk a lot about Brock, so I'm going to talk about TJ for a second. I mean, TJ's a guy that we really love coming out of Oregon. Played tackle there. He is an extremely talented football player that at times, you know, he early on as a player, he wasn't a great practice player. And you guys know how important practice is to me. And there's been times I've literally had to kick him in the butt and be like, come on, man, you got to go. Come on, we need more from you in practice. But he's really grown. He's really matured. You watch him practice now, and you see the intentionality. You see how important it is to him. And he is playing at a high level. But it goes back to the relationships. It goes back to the culture. It goes back to the connection. I mean, every Thursday night, these guys go to dinner together, and the quarterbacks go, and tight ends come sometimes. And I think who bought last week? I think it was BB or maybe Brock. But, like, you know, that's what we want these guys to do. And those two guys have a very special relationship.
Skyler. Skyler Dixon with DAP. Calvin was asking earlier about backups shining and what that means for the starters coming back. I wondered, as a play caller, that receiver, obviously a good problem to have. You've got guys emerging, those guys emerging. But when you're calling plays in a game, and I know the game day roster limits the numbers, but can you get yourself kind of too tied up in trying to get all those guys involved, or is it pretty easy to just kind of not worry about that?
I don't really call plays, you know, to try to get a ball to a spot on the field. I call plays to get balls to people. You know, like the big third down, the first third down of the game that Flournoy, you know, caught, that was designed to get him the ball. You know, that was the design. It was the first progression. I wasn't predicting he was going to catch it and pull away and pull out of the first tackle and go down there and do that. That caught me by surprise in a good way. Another touch for Flo, because I'm assuming that's who you're talking about, was, you know, we were in 2 minute, we were going fast, and we got him to jump. And so free play response means everybody goes deep and you take your shot. And so, I mean, incredible catch. You know, Dak put it in a spot where he could get it. He had the power to step inside of the corner. And you're always going to feature your quote-unquote elite players. We've got a lot of elite players. But, again, I'm going to say this about Dak. What Dak's doing an incredible job of right now is he's just reading progressions. And the first open guy is going to get the ball. And I think that's what we're seeing.
Babe.
Hey, Blockberg, 105.3 The Fan, Cowboys Radio. So, Brian, no matter how hard one works, there's only so much time in the day. And I'm sure when you're a coordinator and play caller, not a head coach, you thought, man, I don't have an extra 10 minutes in my day. Now you're doing all that. Mm-hmm. And you've got the media. You've got everything else you're dealing with. So have you come to a good place where your allocation of time is divided the way you want it, or are you still kind of learning how to allocate your time?
I think you're always learning, babe. I mean, I think I am better. I think that was something that Jerry and I talked about very frankly. I think it was just the two of us actually before he offered me the job, as he was obviously concerned about that. Okay, you've never been a head coach. How are you going to do this? And I, again, went back to some of my strengths, and that's my ability to communicate and to, you know, allocate things to people I trust. Why was Ryan Feeder such an important hire for me? Because I knew I could hand off the game management stuff and not have to be stressed about it. I would hear his voice. Why was Clayton Adams such an important hire for me? I knew I wouldn't have to sit in every run game meeting. Why was Matt Eberflus such an important hire for me? I knew that the defense would be, you know, a well thought out scheme with the principles that I believe in and things like that. But I think you're always learning. You know, I don't sleep a whole lot anyways. Probably need to. My wife actually said to me yesterday, I look tired. I said, that's okay. I'll get through it. But I do think a strength of mine is using the people that I've hired because I believe in them. I'm going to hold them accountable. And if there's things I don't like, they'll know about it. But I do think that the staff was built the right way because I knew that I couldn't be in every room at every point in time. Nick Sorensen, another guy I should have mentioned. I mean, I trust Nick. You know, I'm not in every special teams meeting. I can't. I'm with quarterbacks. So you have to trust the people you hire and let them do their jobs.
Garrett Podell, CBS Sports. Brian, you mentioned that trust in Clayton. Why do you trust him to have kind of full autonomy over the run game, given it's his first year as an OC?
I've seen him do it. You know, again, you got to remember now, we sat here in the spring from 7 a.m. till 11 o'clock at night building this thing. And there was really hard conversations, and there were things I was like, yep, I like that. It makes perfect sense. And there's things I'm like, nope, I would never call that. And he's very humble in a good way. I think you have to be as a coordinator for a offensive-minded head coach. But, man, Garrett, we've had so many, you know, real conversations. And, you know, I know about him as a husband and a father with his beautiful girls and their soccer careers and things like that. We don't just talk about football. If all you do as a coach is talk about football, then you're fooling yourself because you're not going to get people to buy into what you're doing. And then when you have to jump people's asses, which I do probably at times, my wife says too much, then they're going to push back, and that's never a good thing. But, yeah, I mean, he and I have had a lot of great football conversations, a lot of great conversations about life, and that's why I trust him.
What's the conversation like slowing down someone like Rico Dowdle, NFC offensive player that we just went for 200 last
yeah.
week?
It's hard. Rico's a really skilled runner. He's got great vision. He runs hard. You know, the guys that have been around, which we've got a ton of new faces, they don't realize the power that he has. Rico was a guy that, you know, we considered keeping, and we kind of fell in love with Javonte. Were we right? I don't know. Javonte's doing great. Rico's doing great. But the Carolina Panthers are a damn good run team, and that's not just because of Rico. It's because of their offensive line. But I'm proud of Rico.
Come.
Tommy Darsh, DallasCowboys.com. Going back to the third straight year playing Carolina, where have you seen Bryce Young improve year by year, or just where he's gone year by year?
Yeah, more comfortable. And I think, you know, here's a guy who had first-year head coach get fired, and then a new play caller took over his first year. Went from Frank Reich to Thomas Brown, who TB's a really good friend of mine, good coach. He's in New England now. To Dave coming in, and then, you know, Brad Idzik and, you know, Dave being the play caller. He's more comfortable. I mean, you know, I think anytime we talk about bringing the team back, were they down 17, I think, nothing last week against Miami, to be able to go and do that, that's growth and that's maturity, and that's something that he'll pull from and the guys will have confidence. You know, Tet McMillan was a great draft pick. You guys know we loved Tet, had some love for him. They're using, you know, Hunter Renfro the right way, in my opinion. On third down, he's very active in the way they target him. And they've got a stable of backs. I mean, it's not just Rico. I mean, Hubbard's a great player. ETN's a great player. They know how to run it. I mean, their run game system's been in place for a while around the league, going back to Tampa Bay with their line coaches. And there's a commitment there to run the football, which it's no surprise. Dave came from Seattle, Pete Carroll. Well, you better be able to run the football.
There you go, Brian Schottenheimer right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we will have a special edition of the C-Block starring Corey Majors and Stars guest Robert Tiffin right here on The Fan.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.